From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made just 5 days ago in Rochester South Wedge, the city's newest restaurant open. Don't feel bad if you've missed it. You've been busy this year. 2015 has moved quickly, hasn't it? Before it melts away into 2016, we thought we'd spend the hour talking about the new food establishments that opened in the Rochester and Finger Lakes region this year, a reminder about new dining or food options for you, and also a look at how these new establishments are seeking to succeed, to cut against the trends, to make 2016 a successful one. To state the obvious, we can't fit the owners of every new food establishment into our Rochester and Finger Lakes studios this hour. But if you know of a new place that opened this past year and we don't have them here, we'd love to hear from you. You can call the show. You can find us on Twitter, at Evan Dawson on Twitter, or producer Megan Mack at MMackMedia. You can tell us all about it there. And let me go ahead and welcome my guest for the hour. In studio, the man who opened 5 days ago, Brian Van Etten from Swill Burger. How's it going?
Fantastic, Evan. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
How many shifts have you been open now at Swill Burger?
We've been open 2 full shifts, but it feels like 20.
Yeah, right. We're going to talk about that coming up. Kevin McCann from McCann's Local Meats, not far from Swill Burger. In fact, McCann's Local Meats there has been open since June. Is that right?
That is correct.
How's it going?
It's been a whirlwind. Pretty great time.
Well, we're going to talk about what Kevin's doing, because if you don't know McCann's Local Meats, I feel like you're so far one of the few in Rochester. I hear everybody talking about it. Rory Van Grohl's here from Ugly Duck Coffee, and he's had a quite a circuitous path to openness. How are you, Rory?
I'm doing well. Nice to be here, Evan.
Well, it's great to have you back here. Also here are Molly Hartley and Katie Castles from Scratch Bake Shop. Open. They're the veterans, open for almost a full year, January 2015. And how are you guys?
Great. Thanks for having us.
Well, thank you for being here. And in our Geneva studio, let me welcome Ben Daly. From, I'm going to say Sabo, Ben. Sabo?
Yep, that's it.
Okay. How many people say Sebo? C-E-B-O.
Quite a few, but I basically tell them it doesn't matter as long as you know where we're at.
And where are you?
We are located at 34 Linden Street, right in downtown Geneva.
All right. And Ben, you guys opened Sabo when?
We opened the 7th of November, actually.
All right, so very new, and how's it going down there for you?
It's going great. The public has come back to us with great feedback, and everybody seems to enjoy the space, and we're having a lot of fun with it. So,
well, I'm already seeing a pile of comments come in mentioning places like Fiorella's in the public market, a new Italian-themed restaurant. Our friends at the Memorial Art Gallery want us to mention Brown Hound Downtown, and coming new to the mag. I don't know if it's open yet, but I'm assuming that's connected to the Brown Hound Bistro down in Naples, which is great. So there's a lot that's going on. But Brian Van Etten is the newest of the new. How was your first night over there?
To be honest, first night was fantastic. I was talking earlier with everyone here today. It was our first shift. I've been a part of maybe three restaurant openings. This was by far the easiest, the smoothest, the best quality food was going out. It felt like we'd been open at least a month or two. A bunch of kinks still to work out. You know, as you know, we're a quintessential American burger joint. We're a bar, which is yet to be open, still waiting on our liquor license to come through, but we're also a classic arcade. So some of the issues we're finding is, you know, the arcade games need repair. So there's a lot of things that are going into repairing and maintaining the arcade games. But in terms of the restaurant, it's been fantastic. You know, it's been hard. It's been long. There's been a lot of weight on my shoulders and people closest around me. But I think, you know, our guests that have come through the doors have been very, very happy.
Now, remind everyone, what's the full name of your new joint and where are you?
The full name of the you know, it is a confusing thing, but it's called The Playhouse. So
yeah,
the Playhouse is at 820 Clinton Avenue South. It's on the corner of South Clinton and Meg's, right in the Swillburg, on the edge of the Wedge neighborhood. And within the Playhouse is that bar that I mentioned before. That bar, when we get that liquor license, high quality craft beer bar, a lot of you know, interesting cocktails. But the biggest focus of the bar is just customer service. You know, we want an environment where our bar patrons have just a nice, easy ordering. There's no pretentiousness. It's just a very, you know, fun place to be. Within the Playhouse is also that arcade and Swill Burger, which is kind of like the little, you know, it's branded as its own business, but it's inside the Playhouse. And once again, that's just classic American burgers made with, you know, top quality ingredients. A lot of our purveyors are in Rochester. They're using ingredients from Rochester. We think that's important to Rochesterians these days. And I think it's proven by all the businesses that are here, all the new businesses. There's a great focus on, you know, local sourcing, local vendors, and local ingredients.
So the Playhouse has how many arcade games?
I think we have 24 cabinets, old school classic arcade cabinets. Then we have 9 pinball, and those games range from, they date from 1972, I believe, is our oldest game, to maybe 1994 is our most recent game.
Did you call it a cabinet? Is that like the stand up?
Yeah, those are those big stand up.
The stand up arcade games.
Yeah, the classic console.
So 24 of those, and where'd you get them?
So Jeff, my business partner, and I, we kind of came up with our dream wish list. And these were all the games, you know, I was very, you know, kind of a little selfish and a little greedy when doing this. These were the games that I wanted to play. It wasn't, we didn't, you know, have a test group where we asked, what games would you want to play? It was basically, all right, what did I play at Timeout Arcade in Eastview Mall?
Yeah, man.
Or, you know, and these games are The Simpsons and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So anyways, we came up with our dream list. We shopped around. We saw who could get them for us. And as it turns out, there was one place in Tennessee in Chattanooga, and they had everything we wanted. And for, you know, some would say a reasonable price, they shipped them all up to us.
All right, you don't have to answer, but I want to know, what does one game cost?
I mean, so one pinball game will range between maybe $3,000 and $12,000. One of the old school arcade cabinets will range between $700 and maybe $2,000.
Okay. See, all right, we got to ask the whole space here. Because for me, the one arcade game would be Gauntlet. Do you remember Gauntlet?
I remember Gauntlet. It is one of
yes?
my favorites. It is one of my favorites. We have Gauntlet. However, it's a little updated. This was the second Gauntlet released. Same style of gameplay. You can be, you know, the sorcerer or this
I still
person.
Remember hearing Valkyrie is about to die.
That's what then, we have the game you want. We have it in there, Evan.
Yeah, and they had these weird plates of food that would just show up on the floor that you'd grab and eat. You know, like, oh, it's a perfect turkey leg.
Yes.
Valkyrie's all good now. Rory Van Grohl, what game would be on your top of your list?
For me, like, Galaga is on
Galaga.
The top of the list, but
yeah,
I don't
classic.
Believe they have it, unfortunately.
Not quite yet. It should be in house soon. Yeah.
This isn't
me,
like a pass-fail for Playhouse. I'm just kind of curious.
Oh, no, not at all. No. There's plenty to keep me occupied.
All
Pinball,
right.
I'm in all day.
All right. Well, Molly and Kate, top of the list?
Paperboy.
I think
Paperboy.
Pac-Man,
I forgot about that. That's good.
Yeah.
Pac-Man?
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
Ben Daly?
I don't know. I'm a big fan of darts, so.
Do you have dartboard?
Not quite yet.
No darts? Okay.
No dartboards?
The big question then is, when do you get a liquor license, and how has that process gone?
You know, I think anyone who's gone through this process knows it's challenging. There is a lot of red tape. There is a lot of hoops to jump through. We've navigated that, and we've done it fairly successful. Everything's been submitted. You know, we are under the impression, based on everyone we've talked to, it should be within the next 2 to 3 weeks tops.
And what would you say right now, would you say this is a good time to open a restaurant in Rochester?
I think it's a good time for us because we're ready and we needed to open. And as many people who have been following our progress along, it's been 2 years. So we're not ready to pick and choose when's a good time. However, as a restaurateur, I think Rochester is ripe for new businesses that provide a high quality product. And I think that's evident, again, by everyone who's here. No one in this room and maybe Ben down in the Finger Lakes, mm-hmm. we're not reinventing the wheel. We're just modernizing it, and we're giving it a few new parts, and most of those parts are high quality. So
go ahead, Ben.
I think the craft movement is really coming back, and especially with the millennial generation, people tend to appreciate the craft movement again. So it's a really good positive thing.
And so again, listeners, if we're missing anything this hour, you know, plug it in for us. You can call or you can jump on Twitter, because we want to make this is kind of a rundown for people who felt like 2015 blinked by. And maybe you're like me, raising a kid, and you wake up and you go, wait, there's a new Star Wars out? How come they haven't advertised it? I mean, why would they put a movie out and not tell anybody? You know, that's just sort of what life is like sometimes. So our guests are from various sectors in the food industry. And by the way, Brian Van Etten, talking about Playhouse, talking about opening Swillburger, you know, you do have experience in other opening nights, which is probably a good thing, because on this program in the past, you've talked about the tears that can come on an opening night.
I admitted to crying on my last show here.
But this time, it sounded like you were sort of expecting to run out of food, and you almost planned for it?
You know, with all of our products, they're very perishable, and with ordering for an opening, you never really know what to expect. What we did was we promoted opening at 1 p.m. on a Tuesday, and we said we're opening at 4 p.m. tonight. And we ended up getting 100 over 100 people in the doors who were very hungry and ate a lot of burgers. And it happened to fall in the holiday season. There's a lot of our vendors, again, like I mentioned, we're using people that are sourcing locally. A lot of our vendors are on holiday hours, so it wasn't so easy. I can just call up Cisco and ask them to send over, you know, 200 pounds of burgers. You know, that's not how we operate. So, you know, we didn't plan on necessarily running out. We knew we were cutting it close, and we did that on purpose. We didn't want to tax our staff. You know, personally, I didn't want to go home at the end of the day completely exhausted and have to do it day after day right away. So yeah, we kind of purposely, you know, made sure we weren't over ordering, but we were definitely prepared. And, you know, starting tomorrow at noon is when we open the doors for real, and we're prepared to not run out of food starting then.
Very good. All right, so let's try to work backwards on the most other. When did Ugly Duck open, Rory?
We started in June 2015, so that was our first pop-up at Scratch Bake Shop.
Okay, and so I think let's see here, June, January. Sabo opened in November, is that right again, Ben?
Yeah, we opened up actually 11:30 at night in the beginning of November, I'm sorry.
You opened at 11:30 at night?
Yeah, basically that day we passed all of our health inspections and building inspections, and I kind of collapsed on the floor for a little bit and laid there, and I got a couple text messages from Ben Wickham over at Bostrom Farms saying, yeah, come get it. So I looked at my front of house manager and said, let's go.
And there you are. So Sabo, CEBO on Linden Street. What's the description of what you're doing at Sabo, Ben?
So basically, I mean, it's a new American bistro. What we do is we source everything as hyper-local as possible. Primarily, we use two sources. We use Headwater Food Hub and Bostrom's. And basically, we offer a play on refined comfort food, I guess you could say. So familiar fare, just kind of elevated with seasonal ingredients. So.
And, you know, Ben, regular listener to this program probably think I'm just a homer for Linden Street because I've mentioned, in fact, we did a whole hour on our favorite streets in the region. I love Linden Street. I love what's happening there. It has a bit of a throwback feel, and it's great to see some of the development. You're going to have company. Finger Lakes Table's going to be opening, and we're going to talk to Christopher Bates and his wife Isabel coming up on this program next month. So a lot is happening there. But for our listeners who haven't been down to Linden, you want to set the scene a little bit, what it looks like down there, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, Linden is a quaint little one-way street, downtown Geneva, heart of downtown Geneva. A lot of historical buildings there, been around for a long, long time. And we're fortunate because right next door, our neighbors are Microclimate, James Elkin and Steph over there. So great neighbors to have. As you mentioned, FLX Table's coming in. There's a cocktail lounge coming in called the Linden, so everybody's excited about that. Also a cider bar at the end of the street. It comes back to that revitalization of the craft movement, small business. We all kind of work together as a collective to try to do something cool and fun for Geneva. So
we're talking to Ben Daly from Sabo down in our WEOS studios at Hobart and William Smith. And of course, that's our partnership throughout the Finger Lakes on 89.5 FM. Hope you're listening on WEOS down there. Ben, so 2 months essentially, and would you say now is a good time to open a restaurant in the Finger Lakes?
I think so. You know, what I'm noticing about customer trends is, people want it. People want variety. People want small operations, more intimate setting. Especially with, the locavore movements and, there's just so much great quality products and sourcing throughout the Finger Lakes. People are really looking for restaurants to showcase it. So, I think that people are ready for some new and exciting stuff.
Well, let's see if Rory Van Grohl thinks now is a good time to open a business, because it wasn't exactly the easiest thing to get going. Right? Ugly Duck Coffee is, well, what is it exactly, Rory? Tell our audience.
So currently we're a pop-up mobile espresso bar. So we connect with local businesses, retail spaces, and do catering and events.
But at some point, will you be a brick and mortar?
Yeah, we actually are moving forward with our second attempt at a brick-and-mortar plan at 89 Charlotte, which was formerly the 1975 Gallery, which was also formerly the Little Bakery.
Okay. can you, are you willing to characterize how it went in your first go around trying to get brick and mortar opened up?
Lots of learning, learning curves that my wife and I have dealt with going back and forth with the city and the building owner, and the neighborhood service centers that issue certain permits that you have to be able to operate. So we learned a lot. We unfortunately had to back away due to the building owner's relationship with him and his relationship with the city and so forth. So we just walked away from it. Loved the space. Realized that if you can walk away from a space that you really loved, even though you know it's not going to work out for the best for you, that, you know, we can really still do this. And this was the year two of our business plan, was to do a mobile events catering part of it. So
you've kind of flipped it.
We flipped it. We started somewhere. We're like, you know what? We're still going to do this. We're just going to figure out how to do it from point two instead of point one.
Okay. We're talking to Rory Van Grohl from Ugly Duck Coffee. And the reason I'm pressing this point on, you know, the ups and downs of just getting launched is because, first of all, I think it's interesting. People want to know what the business climate is like in our area. But second of all, you know, for anybody who's had a dream like you, you know, to get something off the ground, yeah, there's a lot to learn. It can be complex. And we're not here to throw the city under the bus anything. But I think at the same time, I do think it's instructive. So working with the city, what would you have done differently, and what do you wish they would have done differently?
I mean, going to back and forth through the permitting office, tons of times. I'm sure everyone has done it that has opened a business. But, you know, they expect you to, from my experience, to not sign leases until you know all the information on a property or a location. And a lot of that was just, like, shocking to me because, like, if you don't sign a lease, if you don't sign the place where you're moving into, you think that's like, you know, location, location, location. Like, you think this is great. And it's like, if you lose it, you lose it. Then you don't know. Then you're like missing out on an opportunity. And I think having the ways to go about that would be most beneficial for a small business owner. Being like, okay, like, if you see a property, these are the things you need to look at. Like, you need to know that you need to get a permit from the neighborhood service center. They issue the business permits, you know, like these points that you're kind of blind to until you already enmeshed into the process, I think would be helpful. I think they have rolled out some more helpful information recently than they did previously when we were going through that process. But I think there can be some communication there that would be helpful for people that are, you know, wanting to follow their dreams but don't necessarily have the backing of other people to really navigate that for you.
Okay. When you were going through that process, were there times where you thought you had everything you needed and only to find out you didn't, or did you feel like you were sort of in the dark the whole time?
We thought we did have what we needed. We were given some misinformation and then come to find out when we thought we had all those cards that we didn't have the right information. So that was very frustrating at times, but you know, you just like kind of put your head down and really try to get through it. And then once you get through it, then you find another wall that you have to get through. So it was exhausting, but you know, I think we're better off now doing what we're doing now than we were then.
Okay, so someone wants to open a business, whatever it is, especially in the city of Rochester. First step to make sure they avoid what you went through is what?
Contact your local neighborhood service center and make sure there's no building code violations on your building and that it can be permitted for the building that your operation that you want to operate out of, whether it's a restaurant, coffee shop, bar, whatever. Because, you know, they have the say as far as that goes.
Was that sort of an emotional loss for you to try to get over that loss of the first possible home?
Oh, totally. I mean, having keys to a space and going there and seeing it, like, what it can be, not what it is amazing. You know, like, you see the raw ability of this space, and that's like your hopes and dreams. Like, you fall in love with something, and being able to walk away from that was a huge lesson. But I think we're only going forward to a better spot, and the space we're going into now is I think even better for us.
For our listeners trying to sort of envision what Rory's doing, if you know what people sort of affectionately refer to as the third wave coffee movement, Joe Bean, and Rory's a longtime veteran of Joe Bean, but Pour Coffee, of course, Fuego, Ugly Duck, I thought a year ago you'd be open
and
would be in that constellation.
Yeah.
But eventually will. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say that like another thing that held us back a few months was parking. Yeah. In the neighborhood that we were in, we had one.
Katie Miller,
one,
like, yeah.
One gentleman complained.
Parking, you're kidding.
We had one gentleman complain, unfortunately, and that set us back 2+ months.
He complained, and what happened?
We had to go to a city council board meeting and pay to be heard and have our case heard. And basically, he said that he wanted to have space so he could pull out of his driveway and move around his cars. He didn't want that space interrupted. So, yeah, we had to.
Now, the host of this program has to be careful because the gentleman in question is not here to defend himself. But that sounds a little myopic. Were you frustrated by that?
Absolutely. I mean, that's 2 months of rent. That's 2 months of planning that you can't go forward with your plans. You know, like we didn't do any build out because we were waiting whether or not that was approved. If that was approved, then, you know, that was a lost cause. But throughout that process, we unfortunately found out a lot of other layers that we needed to figure out. And, you know, we ended up leaving the space.
Okay. So, again, set to open, you hope when? And your brick and mortar?
I will say spring, summer 2015.
Okay. We'll see. but you've learned a lot. See, you saw the
absolutely.
Mistakes in the past.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And second of all, how are you finding business now?
For the pop-ups? A multitude of ways. Friends that are opening businesses that have retail locations. Scratch has been awesome. Fiorella in the public market has been awesome. I didn't know Allison and Gino before we opened, and they just emailed us, and I met with them, and they've been amazing. So Fiorella has been awesome. Just social media, connecting with different people. People coming to the pop-up and be like, hey, I have this event, would you be into doing that? And going from there. So
I do think it's interesting, you know, a couple years in earnest to this sort of third wave coffee movement. Has that become a cliche term to you, or is that still okay?
I mean, it's fine. Whatever one people want
what
to
do
call,
you call it.
I just call it specialty coffee.
Specialty coffee.
Yeah.
And what's your definition of it?
I mean, it's a graded sense of coffee. So like you would do high quality meats, like where you're doing something that tastes way better, like you're grading the meat. So it's like coffee's graded on a scale of 1 to 100, and we deal with a certain scale of like the upper 25% of that. You know what I mean? So like that is technically the grade of that coffee.
For the people in our audience who are interested to know where products come from,
sure,
and how it affects people, is this specialty coffee movement, is it better for the growers?
Absolutely, 100%.
Explain how.
I mean, a lot of these specialty coffee roasters that are buying these green products are sourcing their coffee either directly to the farmer and developing those relationships with those farmers at origin, or they're going through green buyers who are doing that for them and getting that information for them.
And when you do that that way, better prices for the growers.
Better prices. They're getting paid better. They're getting more of a living wage so they can support their families and support their communities throughout. Like, they're getting contracts rather than just, like, per harvest, so that if there is a bad harvest, they actually still have a living. So not everything's wiped out. So it's better for everybody in the chain. And so when you're paying a little more at the end of the $3 cup of coffee rather than your dollar cup of coffee, it's because of these things.
Sure. And so to kind of put a fine point on that, you know, I don't want to assume that every time I see what looks like a bag of roasted coffee from a specialty purveyor is doing all of those good things that you just described, but is there an easy way to find out or to know? Do you ask questions about where you're buying from, who roasted it? You know, how do you do that?
Yeah, I mean, whoever you're talking to, any roaster or company is going to be ecstatic about sharing any of that information, be excited about, like, the food process in the chain. Just like a chef is going to be excited about whatever greens they're getting in or whatever meat they're getting in. They're going to hype it up. They're going to be excited about it. They're going to be like, these guys do it really well. You guys should check them out. It's like, it's the same mentality of like just being excited about that raw product.
Well, we're talking to a number of business owners as we talk about what's new in the food scene in Finger Lakes and Rochester area for 2015. Let's get a short break in. We're going to come back, talk to Kevin McCann from McCann's Local Meats. Molly and Kate are here from Scratch. Ben Daly from Sabo down in our Finger Lakes studio. Brian Van Etten from Playhouse, which is just open. And you just heard from Roy Van Grohl from the peripatetic Ugly Duck Coffee, and soon to have a permanent home. So all of that and much more next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on the next Connections. First hour, the year in money. We'll talk markets. We'll talk about how the Dow is doing, how your 401k is doing, the price of oil, how that's impacting markets, how Europe is impacting our economy, and more. Then second hour, Greentopia. What was it, what is it, and what's happening now in Rochester with Greentopia? That's all Tuesday on Connections.
Like a trail of breadcrumbs, what we do on the internet gives companies a picture of who we are and what we want. But what if everything we write on the web provided insights into our personality?
Unconsciously, the choice of words that we make as we express ourselves truly does reflect who we are.
Mining our words to understand our personalities later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. Andy says, Geneva rocks. Thanks for including them in your discussion this hour. Absolutely. You've been hearing from Ben Daly at Sabo and the new business, the new restaurant there on Linden Street, a bustling and growing area there. Lauren writes to us on Twitter, would love to see some of these local spots looking to the Southwest neighborhoods, were diverse, and want them. Yeah, maybe we'll see. You know, very interesting to see where things go and why. You know, Brian Van Etten, why did you choose where you chose for Playhouse, for example?
You know, the location was based off, I basically lived in the Swilberg neighborhood at the time, was walking around, thought that neighborhood was ripe for something of high quality. And when Jeff and I kind of stumbled into that space, we knew that it had huge, huge potential. So that, you know, as simple as that.
All right, well, let's talk to Kevin McCann from McCann's Meats, which is, if you haven't been there, where are you, Kevin?
739 Clinton Ave South.
All right.
Edge of the Wedge building.
Edge of the Wedge building there, right next to the Cub Room, I think.
That's correct.
Which is another new establishment. I think it's new this year, so there's
another
one. They
opened 10 days before us.
Okay, so they are new this year. So the Cub Room is another one on the list, new in 2015. And you've been open, so in June?
Yeah, June 1st.
How's it going?
It's been tremendous. You know, the response to this idea has been pretty fantastic. I think, as has been alluded to here, people wanting to know where their food comes from and have that connection to it really lends to having some great customers, some great conversations, and being able to sell some great product.
All right, so you talk about what the idea is. Tell me how you go through, you know, bringing in what you have, what you offer, where it comes from, what that process is like.
So I spent about a year and a half traveling around to different farms around in all of Western New York, meeting farmers, seeing what sort of breeds they're raising, what their feeding program is, and really getting down to the nitty-gritty of the process that they're going through, and making sure it sort of meets the needs of what this whole program is, which is no hormone, no antibiotic, no steroid, and trying to find farms that are herbicide and pesticide free as well, so that really what we're bringing to customers is chemical free a product as possible. And you know, we found through Cornell Cooperative Extension, we had a lot of help from them to help us find a lot of these farms. You know, we do some business with Seven Bridges out in Lima. We do a lot of business with Youngman Farms out in Wolcott. As Ben was alluding to, we do a lot of business with Headwater Food Hub. Mm-hmm. They're a really great resource for us. And, you know, it's been great to sort of develop these relationships, to see other farmers, now that they have caught wind of what we're doing, to come in and try to tell us about, you know, what they're doing as well and get on board. But, you know, we bring in whole animals from local farms. We break everything down in-house, and then we make everything from the fresh retail cuts. We grind fresh meat every single day. We make fresh sausage every single week. We make deli meats every single week. We do a full line of prepared foods every single day. We make bone broth from all of the, you know, the bones that we have left over from the animals. We fill our deep fat fryers with the beef fat that comes off of the animals. We make lard and suet for people to be able to cook with. We cook with a lot of the lard and suet ourselves. So I mean, it's really about utilization as much as possible.
I just noticed your hat. You're
You got to walk the walk, yeah?
Yeah. Can you describe what's on your hat?
This hat actually is a for a friend of mine's business
who runs a place. Not a
no, he runs a business called the Craft Butcher's Pantry, and this is his. And supporting him, I wear it. It's again, that's what it's all about,
it's
right?
Just the image of a pig.
That's correct, and it's not a specific breakdown of a pig, but it's alluding to that. Yeah.
Yeah, alluding to whole every part.
That's correct.
Every part.
And that's correct.
That's what you're talking about there. What is the most popular item that you're selling for people just walking off the street to McCann's?
You know, sausage has been a big hit, hundreds of pounds a week. But beef as a whole, I think, sells more than just about anything. The idea of the dry age steaks that we do, I think, has been pretty widely popular. People ask a lot of questions about it. They are curious about it. And to that degree, even the dry age ground beef that we do, the beef and bacon blend that we do for ground beef, you know, so it's not really any one thing, but it's the excitement that people have to try these things that they've never experienced before.
Kevin, do you think, you know, I don't want to overgeneralize a trend here, but everybody we're talking to today seems to get excited when customers ask questions about how things are made or the sources, et cetera. Is that happening more often?
Every opportunity that I have to speak to a customer is everything that I could possibly hope for, because they're, especially with what we do, the customers are coming in, they're seeing names on steaks, they're seeing cuts, they're seeing shapes, they're seeing all kinds of different stimulus that they've never been exposed to. So in as opposed to them leaving frustrated or walking around feeling that sort of buyer's anxiety, the fact that they'll ask the question, engage in the dialogue, and allow me to kind of tell them about what we do, why we do it that way, why you're going to really, really like this, why this specific cut isn't scary, right? Because the first people will say, thing is, I don't know what to do with that. I don't know how to cook that. And, you know, there's only so many cooking methods, right? So you break it down, you kind of relieve a lot of those fears. You know, I say it all the time, I'm a butcher by trade, but more often than not, I'm a protein psychologist, right? Step off the ledge. Everything's okay, right? You're gonna love
well
this.
Done,
you,
sir.
You know how to do it. You know, so the question and the dialogue is crucial.
Ben Daly from our WEOS studio, I heard you jumping in there. Do you welcome that kind of transparency and those questions from customers?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love talking to the customers or anybody who has any questions about a dish or an ingredient or anything like that. It's a thrill. I get so passionate, and then I just keep talking and talking and talking and talking and talking. So, but it's great. I mean, there's so many great ingredients all around us, and we have such great opportunity to kind of educate people on, you know, how things have been consumed for years and years and years and years, you know. So it's really great.
And I'm not saying it's every single customer, but Brian Van Etten from Playhouse, is it enough to at least, I don't know if it's a trend, but just to notice that customers are more interested and that that's a healthy thing?
You know, I think it's one of the best things that could happen. You know, I would like to think that it was back there, you know, I'd like to think that everybody was doing it and no one would have to ask those questions. And I, one of the things with Swillburger, you know, we source all these great products, but I'm not shoving it in your face because I am firm that people should be doing this. You know, if someone has those questions, I am over the moon to answer them. I'm excited to tell them about Dave, the driver from Headwater Foods, who just dropped off 800 pounds of potatoes and which farm they came from, you know. But, you know, I like to think that a lot of people are doing it these days, and they are, you know, what a lot of people are using great products, great technique, and a lot of them are locally sourced. So,
and they're willing to talk about it.
Yeah. They're willing to talk
about
it.
Pull back the curtain.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely am kind of over the term farm to table, you know what I mean? Cause like you just said, it's something that people should be doing. I mean, the abundance of the quality products that we use is just silly not to use them. So I think food to, you know, farm to table is overused. It's just a moral stand. This is what we should be doing. It just makes sense.
I had been cutting meat all over Brooklyn, Manhattan, Hudson Valley, and a lot of these larger name butcher shops that were claiming locally sourced product, they were coming from Western New York, you know, Central New York. And so it was being from this area, it was a real no-brainer when my wife and I were putting together our business plan to really go back to a smaller city, especially for our business model, where you're seeing these things happen. They're in big cities, right? And they're all sort of defining local as in like 250 miles, right? Well, you know, we're trying to do things much, much closer than that, you know, 60, right. 70, you know what I mean? As you're talking about the abundance of great product, the bounty of Western New York is plentiful.
And maybe a reminder, if you're a customer who cares about buying local and you see local on a tag somewhere, don't just assume it's within 10 or 20 or 60 or 70 miles.
Just like we talk about with so many different products that we have in the store, you know, customers will come in and they'll drop the big O word, organic. They'll drop all of these terms, these phrases, these labels that people have come to self-define, that, and their own definitions might actually have nothing to do with what the legitimate definition is. And so my customers, the conversation I have with them all the time, and I must say this about 10 times a day, we're not really about labels, right? We're about farmers. You know, we're about what these people are actually doing, the processes that they're actually engaging in, and being able to have a very open and honest conversation about that with the people.
Well, the wise Jedis at the table are Molly Hartley and Kate Castles from Scratch, because the businesses we've been talking to are new. You know, Playhouse has been open for 5 days. Ugly Duck moves around all the time. November for Sabo. McCann's opened in June. I feel like we've been talking about Scratch forever, but technically didn't open until January of 2015, right? Is that right?
Yep, that's right. January 25th.
And where are you?
We're at 113 Park Avenue.
Okay. But you guys got to know each other, Molly and Kate got to know each other a while back, and this idea was something that you had thought about for a while. Can you take us through that process?
Sure. So Molly and I met at the Village Bakery. Molly was the head pastry chef there, where she hired me. And I worked under her for about 6 months, I think. And we decided that we both really loved doing the custom sort of special occasion desserts, wedding cakes, things like that. And we were getting sort of orders just from friends and family when I said to her one day, I think we could probably do this on our own and not have to work for anybody else anymore. So it was sort of a pipe dream that we just worked really hard to make our own.
You know, as someone who's married to a woman who owns her own business, the autonomy of owning your own is huge. What blows me away are the people who say, oh, you own your own business, it's got to be so easy, right? I mean, like, days off whenever you want. I mean, like, every day is a work day. We just got through a holiday. Every day is a work day. Probably the same for you guys, yeah?
Absolutely.
God bless my wife, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, so let's work through how it's going. Why don't you guys both tell me how your year one is going? You're coming up on officially 1 year.
Yes, 1 year.
And a lot of businesses in the food world don't even make it past a year or two,
yeah.
And you guys will. So how's it going?
It's been amazing. We never thought we would be able to quit our other full-time jobs. Within 2 months of opening, we both were able to do that and just focus full-time on Scratch, which was a huge relief. I don't think either of us were getting more than 4 hours of sleep a night before that. So we got more sleep, which was great. We never thought we would have employees. Now we have, I think, 5 employees, which is also awesome.
How much did you have to learn about health plans, all kinds of stuff?
Oh my gosh, we're still constantly learning. It's been such a learn as we go process, and it's all new to us. So, yeah.
Well, then let me ask you what I asked Rory and Brian and Kevin and Ben. Is this a good time to open a business right now?
Absolutely. I think now or never. If you're gonna do it, you should do it now. Yep. Yeah. I think that the support local movement is huge. We've been nothing but supported by everyone in Rochester.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually got the seed money for our business via Kickstarter. So, and that was mostly funded by community members, which was amazing. We never really thought that we would be able to get off the ground as quickly as we did. But the support from the community has just been overwhelmingly supportive.
All right. That doesn't mean that every business opening goes perfectly. And so what's one thing you look back and you wish you had done differently?
Well, we did sign our lease, I think, 8 months before we opened. So it took us a good 8 months to do the renovating. Like I said, we were working other full-time jobs. It was just hard to find the time. There was a lot of renovating that needed to be done. We built the whole kitchen out of the space we were renting. It was a salon prior to us renting it. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just, agreed. We sort of jumped on the space when it became available, just because it is such a great location, but we did not anticipate having a retail location at all. We were sort of the opposite of Rory. We wanted to have sort of a mobile, maybe, you know, pop up at local farmers markets and things like that, and do like one niche product. And then when the space became available, we just sort of said, okay, well, you know what? It would be great to have this space, so we'll make it work. We'll do whatever it takes to make it work.
Okay. Well, I'm curious to know, you know, we've talked on this program about pop-ups and, you know, how interesting that is. You know, Brian, I think Owl House hosted a Playhouse or Swillburger pop-up at one point, right?
Yeah, Swillburger has done a handful of pop-ups, but I got to tell you, I'm over the moon not to have to do them anymore.
Okay. It's kind of what I'm wondering, because, yeah. You know, Rory, you've done them, right?
I do them every week.
You try to do them every week. Yeah. You guys have hosted. Have you just hosted, haven't done them?
Yeah, just hosted.
Okay. Is this a sustainable thing? Are we going to continue to see pop-ups? Are we going to see them more in the way that Rory and Brian's businesses have had to employ them, as sort of kind of triaging a little bit? Brian, you used it as a way to kind of get some of the kinks out, right?
A way to get the kinks out. It was a way to get the word out. And it was a chance, like I think I mentioned before, it was to get my crew trained. It was an easy way so that when day one, you know, I mentioned day one for us felt like we'd been open a month. It was that smooth. Yeah, there were problems, but it felt smooth. And that, you know, it's attributed to the huge delays that we had, but it's also attributed to me getting a handful of men and women in to train to learn how to make the milkshakes properly and learn how to cook a burger the right way. So, you know, will they stick around? I don't know that there's a lot of pop-ups that, you know, like that's the sole business. I think pop-ups for the most part are a great way to experiment, to be creative, to showcase new product, try out new things. And, you know, I hope they're always around. At Swillburger, we want to try new things already. We've only been open 2 shifts, but my chef and I are talking about doing Sunday night Chinese food. You know?
What? Ben, what do you think on the pop-up scene? I don't know how often you see that down in the Finger Lakes.
Well, actually, it's funny because Sabo actually started as a pop-up movement and an exclusive dinner supper club, basically, that my wife and I ran out of our house. We converted the lower level of our house into a dining room and had one huge communal table. And that's kind of what gave us the confidence to kind of move forward with brick and mortar. We were fortunate enough to be working with some really great building owners and the Geneva community, and, you know, the rest is history. But I think that pop-ups are definitely a great way to kind of dial in on what you want your output to be, and maybe sort of just play around and experiment and really define what you're trying to do, make that statement, you know. It's trial and error. It's trial and error. It's a lot of fun.
I do dig it. It does sound like it's a lot of fun. And to be fair here, I also want to keep trying to mention as many of the other new food establishments that have opened in the last year that aren't represented right here on this program. One of you mentioned you worked at the Village Bakery. Is that right? Are we talking Pittsford?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They opened a new one in the Armory. Is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Was that this year?
And then they're opening one in Eastview Mall.
Oh, they are?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So the Village Bakery is growing. So the one near the Armory, Culver Road Armory, I think, is where one. So there's another example. There's no favoritism on the program today. We want to open all of our eyes as to what is out there and available with our guests. Molly and Kate from Scratch Bake Shop, opened since this past January. Rory Van Grohl from Ugly Duck Coffee, popping up since, well, the middle of the year, and soon to be open in its own space. Ben Daly from Sabo in the Finger Lakes, that's in Geneva, opened in November. Kevin McCann, McCann's Local Meats, opened in June. Brian Van Etten from Playhouse, just opened 5 days ago. And Kevin, when it comes to, you know, local meats, you talked about something that I think probably struck a nerve with a lot of people. Is you mentioned the term organic and the way people will come in and they'll say they want something.
Sure.
But you kind of indicated they don't always know what it means, et cetera.
How
do you work with them on that?
Yeah, you can line 10 people up in a row and you can ask them all what their definition of organic is when it comes to meat, and you're going to get 10 different answers.
Is that frustrating to you, or do you view it as an opening to kind of have a dialogue? How do you do that?
You kind of feel like a broken record sometimes because you're explaining it again and again. But again, I would much rather have that opportunity to explain it again and again. More often than not, the definition that they're looking for is the hormone, antibiotic, and steroid-free meat.
I was going to ask you, when they say organic, what do they usually mean?
That's more often than not what they mean. And then, you know, then there's variations on the conversation of grass-fed and what grains farmers could be using and so on and so forth. So, but it's more often than not, you know, you tell them things are hormone, antibiotic, and steroid-free, and they go, well, that's what I meant. And that's great, because that's what I serve.
You can't all be like Scratch, where people just want what is decadent and delicious. I mean, do they ask? Do you have any customers ask about it, or is it more just the barrier is how delicious is this?
Sometimes people ask. We also specialize in vegan and gluten-free items, so people are constantly asking what's in what.
McCann's really specializes in vegan.
Well, my animals are vegans, right? So do I, you know.
People asking for vegan more often now than they did even a year or two ago?
Yes,
yeah?
Absolutely. Yeah, allergen-free anything has just become so hard to find, especially in Rochester. There were a few places that had it that have since closed in the past year. So it's becoming more and more requested at our shop, absolutely.
Yeah, so for people who think you can't make good vegan, you know, sweet anything, obviously we see that is wrong. But what's the key to making great vegan, you know, something decadent, a cookie, a cake, et cetera?
I think the key in Molly and my case is that neither of us eats vegan or gluten-free. So when we're testing out a new recipe, we're really, just sort of comparing it to what the traditional thing might be like. And if we like it, then we really hope that someone who does eat allergen-free will like it. You can ask Rory his opinion on our vegan sweets and how he likes them.
Are you a vegan?
I am.
Okay.
Yeah. But I have the brownies that they brought in today are delicious. They tried them out on me yesterday, so I am a fan of them. I did tell Molly a little less icing and frosting. Other than that, they are delicious. If you ever ask my opinion on anything, I usually
He'll
give
tell
it.
You.
Yeah. You probably give it when you weren't asked.
No. Okay. I try not to, only when asked. I've grown up a little bit. Maybe when I was younger, I'd give it a lot more unasked. But yeah, their stuff is great. And I don't say that just because they're my friends.
Well, we're laughing about the vegan thing, but listen, I don't mean to demean anybody's taste or preferences, and I actually think it's quite a vibrant vegan scene in dining in Rochester.
Oh, I mean, it's been easy to eat vegan in Rochester for over a decade.
Yeah, yeah.
But I personally would love people just to know where their food's coming from, whether or not they're vegan or not.
Absolutely. Eric writes to us.
That's the most important thing.
Eric says on Twitter, went to Swill Burger on Tuesday. Would have loved to go in the summer, but worth the wait. Strawberry jam is my new burger topping. Brian, you want to explain?
Yeah, we have a hot jam. So we basically make a jalapeno hot sauce, and then we have a strawberry jam. We blend them up in a certain ratio, and I actually told my chef Christian that today. I was like, that is my new favorite thing. It's just fantastic. So it's just a spicy, sweet topping, and put it on a burger, dip some fries in it, what have you, and you know, I guarantee you'll like it.
What was the inspiration there? I mean,
you know, the inspiration there is, you know, balance of flavor, sweet, salty, spicy, you know, and trying to get a lot of different elements of taste in your mouth at one time. And you know, that's what our hamburgers are about. They're just balanced, you know, nothing's too this or that, not too fat, not too spicy, not too salty. So the hot jam is the ultimate, you know, blend of those tastes. So it has some heat to it. Actually, Balsam Bagels, my favorite bagel, is a salt bagel with the raspberry jalapeno cream cheese. They look at me, you know, cross-eyed when I say it because it's just crazy, they think. But it's that balance of salty, sweet, and spicy, which cannot be beat.
All right. Well, do you once in a while try something like that and you think, this is going to be great, and you get in the kitchen and it does not work?
I think in the past, definitely the beauty of Swill Burger is that we are so classic. You know, we're trying ketchup and mustard. Does it taste like good ketchup? Oh, heck yes. All right, we'll keep that recipe. You know, the mustard, you know, we're looking for yellow mustard. So when we're making this product, we try to get it to taste like Heinz or what have you. So we're not really thinking outside the box too much just yet. But
sort of sounds like it, though.
Well, you know, kind of. And Chinese food Sunday nights.
Yeah, right. Well, we're down to our last minute. Let's go around the table and let our guests tell you where you can find them. And again, this has been a fun hour for us as we review some of the new openings in 2015 in the Rochester Finger Lakes region. And down there in our WUS studio is Ben Daly at Sabo, which is on Linden Street. Ben, let people know where to find you online and in brick and mortar.
Our location is right here in downtown Geneva. We're at 34 Linden Street. Our website is www.sabofair.com, and we're on Facebook, facebook.com/eatsabo. Come on down and see us.
C-E-B-O. Rory Van Grohl, Ugly Duck Coffee. You cannot find him. Not yet. Well, soon, but you'll find him at some pop-ups. Where do they find
him? Yeah, check out our website, uglyduckcoffee.com. You can follow Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff. Track us down. Try to post our weekly updates where we're going to be. You can find us Thursday, New Year's Eve, 1 to 8 at the Playhouse. If you want to come hang out with us there, that'll be fun.
Such an incestuous hour.
This is a great reason why being involved in this industry is great. All the connections and awesome people that you get to meet.
All right, real quick, Scratch, where to find you guys?
113 Park Avenue, and our website is scratchbakeshoproc.com.
All right, Brian Van Etten.
820 Clinton Avenue South. Corner of Clinton and Meg's, and the website is theplayhouseroc.com.
Theplayhouserock.com. And McCann's, Kevin McCann.
McCann'sLocalMeats.com. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You see all of our daily lunch specials there, and hopefully we'll see you in the shop. We're tucked back at 739 South Clinton Ave.
You got it. Well, whether you're vegan or you love meat, whether you love sweet stuff or you just want a great burger or a great meal, here's to great eating in 2016, and thanks to everyone for coming in. Thanks, everyone.
Cheers.
Have a great afternoon. Hey, thanks, Evan. And thanks to Val LeBanc and the engineer, Megan Mack, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson, and this is member-supported.